This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geek, show number 674 with guest Paul Barron, recorded on March 12th, 2026. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. Although, wind warnings tonight. Paul, you're out on the East Coast, Connecticut. You've had some snow. You've had quite a bit of snow this year. I know up in Boston, but has Connecticut gotten all the snow?
Oh, that yeah.
Oh, yeah.
In New York City. It was an amazing winter, yeah. And the cold.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
I know you like talking about weather. It was an exceptional one. In 30 years, I don't remember anything like this living in this area. So
really?
Yeah.
That kind of historic snow for you guys on the East Coast?
Not as much the snow. Mostly just sustained cold for like 7 days of hitting 5 degrees, 0 Fahrenheit over and over, night after night. And day only getting low teens. So that's really unusual around here.
You've been a champion of heat pumps. We're going to see how well he did. Don't give it away. Don't give it away just yet. But anyways, well, it was beautiful today. We have wind warnings. So they were expecting like 60 and 70 degree or 70 mile an hour winds tonight.
Wow.
So whatever's coming in is heading out your way. But anyways, we'll post the show with some world-class show notes. And there will be some links out there that you're going to want to follow. Check them out, theaverageguy.tv. Big thanks to our Patreon subscribers. You guys know who you are. And you do it each and every month. If you want to join that team, theaverageguy.tv/Patreon. And appreciate you guys doing that as well. And there's plans. There's just one plan. It's $5. If you want to join 1 month or as many months as you want, appreciate that. And then if you want to check out theaverageguy.tv/Coinbase right now, if you want to get into crypto and you want to create a new account through Coinbase, if you make a $20 trade, they'll give you $30. So create a new account, do a $20 trade, they'll give you $30. You're making money. Give it a try. If you want to give that a shot, head out to theaverageguy.tv/Coinbase and you can get in. Prices have been up a little bit over the last couple of weeks. They took a little bit of a dive and they've come back. But check it out today, theaverageguy.tv/Coinbase. Okay, you heard from him earlier, one of my favorite guests of all time. I always love having Paul on. Paul, I don't know why I don't have you on sooner. It's been a couple of years, but welcome back.
Thank you, Jim. It's always an honor to be here. And you sound extra perky tonight with your no more back pain.
Yes. Yeah. It's amazing. I've said this on the show before, but I'll say it again. Chronic pain is horrible.
Yeah.
It's just horrible. I have a new appreciation for it. Now, chronic, the definition of that is it never ends. And it ended for me. So I feel very, very fortunate. But for folks that struggle with pain all the time, I have said this before, but I am sorry. It's horrible. And I only suffered, 6 months, but it is gone. And yes, it does feel better. So, but for those of you out there suffering from some kind of chronic pain, I am sorry. That's just a terrible thing. But Paul, great to have you back. Hey, congratulations. So I don't know how many folks watch Matt Farrell. Undecided, right? It's his podcast or YouTube channel, whatever you want to call it. He's a big deal. The other day, I asked you, 3 or 4 weeks ago, hey, Paul, would you come on the show? It's time to catch up with you. The next day, or maybe 2 days later, here I'm watching Matt Farrell. Boom, there is your face. I was like, that's Paul. I know that guy. I mean, Matt Farrell's a big deal in this space and he calls you friend. My good friend, Paul Barron, was doing this. How did that all happen?
Oh, let's see. EV Club of Connecticut, meeting him at Hotel Marcel, the country's first passive house certified hotel. Those kind of projects are where we bumped into each other, but also Matt Reisinger and heat pumps. That's where it actually started. Getting heat pumps for heat pump water heaters. That was 6-7 years ago now. You're showing a clip there. That's cool.
Your heat pumps, right? That were on the.
Yep. By the way, it was 75 degrees 3 days ago, and we still have snow on the lawn a bit. It's a weird winter. It's just finishing out the winter topic. But you just saw a little clip there, which shows the heat pumps and a lot of snow. And we'll get into that. But yeah, it was a torture test. And nerding out with him about the tech, like, he's so good at weaving a story and making it interesting and showing B-roll that makes sense that goes to the theme. So he does all the work. I just show up and record a little bit. So it's just really cool. Really an honor that he asked me to do that.
Yeah, it was fun to see you on there talking. We're showing, if you're watching the video, you can see that on there. If you're catching the audio, I'll put the link in the show notes if you want to. And I encourage you to go out and watch it. Paul, you've always been, in the time I've known you, you've always been the champion of heat pumps. And we talked about heat pumps on hot water or water heaters, so to speak. And of course, there's always the HVAC version of that. You guys spend some time in this video talking about, did it pay off? Matt did a big retro. I shouldn't say retro. You did the retro. Mm. Matt did a brand new build from the, you know, he put in geothermal all the way, you know, the full service of that, all the insulation. You've been spending some time fixing maybe an old house with insulation and such and putting some new HVAC equipment in. What you learn through that process?
Yeah, so 1990 house, 2x4 exterior walls, pretty typical. And actually, listening to Matt Farrell's Fallen podcast about perovskite solar, and he went back and talked about heat pumps a little bit with his brother, referring to houses like mine, built in like 50s, 60s, 70s, where fuel energy prices were cheap. So that's how you built a house, you know? My builder actually said, when I was moving in, talking about how a house needs to breathe because you have a gas furnace in the basement and it needs some oxygen, and they intentionally leave some things, you know, leaky. So when you put all that together, it's just reality. And I'm laughing, but it's kind of painful to think of how huge a housing stock there is with the same kind of issue. So that's what was fun about the comparing contrasting video. He's got, I think, 10 or 12 inch thick walls, no thermal bridging, incredible triple pane windows that are European style with really good seals. But that's not what a lot of people are able to do or able to have. And that was true for my wife and I to try to build new in early COVID with supply chain problems or even finding land suitable. Well, mine's probably a little more typical, and that is, how do you get a house up to snuff energy efficiency wise so that you can even go possibly dream of going all electric? And that's what the video is about. So yeah, wasn't easy, but I learned a whole lot. And that's kind of the way it goes with things, right? The hard way.
It sounded like in the video, and I'm having some issues with your video. Speaking of that, maybe to start and stop your video.
Yeah, did it get better after streaming when you're showing B-roll there or no?
No, it didn't. I thought maybe the B-roll had thrown it off a little bit, but I don't think it. I think we're, for whatever reason, we're struggling with a little bit. Try that. It's okay. Most folks listen to this on the audio. So if you're watching the video, just, you'll be fine. Just put up. It'll be fine.
Yeah, I did ask. It looks like on the stream, YouTube, it's smooth. I think it's only us in Restream. So don't worry about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So okay.
Don't worry about turning it on.
So we'll just let it go. It's fine. Okay. I'll just ignore it. So the, in the video, it talks a little bit about, you know, I'm in a 1959 house here in Omaha, Nebraska. And it's also, you know, sometimes on a really cold night, the walls get cold, right? We have blown in insulation in the attic. Is it, you know, the question is it enough, you know? And then the real question is, I have windows from the 80s. So I have old vinyl windows from the 80s. They do okay, but certainly new windows would be better. Paul, as you think about these investments, right? I mean, I could rip all the siding off, put house wrap and new insulation in the walls and do that with new siding, right? I could look at the attic and spend a whole bunch of time, you know, trying to make sure the attic, and it seems like the attic's the first place to start for most people, right? I could replace all the windows at maybe $20,000 or $30,000, you know, for replacement for all the windows.
Yep.
And never seeing the payoff, or I think I would never see the payoff. I don't know. You've gone through this thought experiment. If you're in an older home, is it worth it to go through all the gyrations to make it as, you might, will you see a payoff? I don't know. Talk a little bit about your thought process, but because I think about that all the time, anytime I'm doing an improvement.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the biggest thing that jumps to mind as you're saying that is how long are you going to live there? Right. So Matt and I had in common, we're trying to build forever homes. He's a bit younger than us. You and I are the same age. And unless you're going to be there 15, 20 years, it's not really just about payback though. It's about health and comfort, humidity control, temperature control, all that. So my wife and I, we had objectives that were not like looking for a 5-year return on investment for the solar and battery. Right? It's not just that. But yeah, Jim, if you're going to put that kind of money and you're actually moving in 3 or 5 years, well, then no, you're not going to get that back even on the windows. And by the way, window quotes in 2022, we're looking at houses in 2023, anywhere from 24 windows in the house, anywhere from $30,000 to $130,000 for Anderson windows, you know, upsellers, just crazy. that's just the windows. It was daunting. Everything was way more expensive than we had hoped. And then something Matt and I hadn't come, and he was building around the same time, and it was not a great time doing it. But yeah, so you're on the right track thinking about windows, and then there's the exterior walls. We added polystyrene, you know, foam to the outside of the house before re-siding it that had, looks like aluminum foil on one side, right? So that's two forms of heat you're trying to keep out and keep in. And then you put a little thicker vinyl. So all that added to the R value, the external walls. So yeah, you had to look at how much money do we have after downsizing and how much we're going to have solar batteries, all of it. But where do you want to put your money? Well, it does make sense to try to make the house a whole lot more energy efficient. And it was about, I think, $2,800 or $3,000 to do AeroSeal. That was a big one. That might sound like a fair amount. What the heck is that? Your aerosol, I think I might have talked about it in the previous time. We talked in September 2023. I had moved in that much earlier. I moved in 2022, so 1 year before. Now I'm here almost fourth winter. That was aerosolized like a vapor. They put it in the entire house with no furniture in it, and they cover all the horizontal surfaces like flooring. And think of your house like a stop leak when a tire. You shove that stuff in, and it goes out the hole, and it clogs up the hole. It's doing that for your house. Every little nook and cranny, every little hole in floorboards and baseboards and around heater holes to the basement, all this stuff just gets plugged up if it's less than about half an inch. Stuff that's bigger than that, they go around with a little expanding foam and fix. That moved the house from 8 air exchanges per hour to 0.8. Oh. So think about what I just said. You're heating that. So you're using natural gas in the winter to just heat the world outside in your attic or seal it. But that means you need CO2 control. You need a fresh air system as well. And that's how building codes are going to be. The last 10, 15 years, a house is going to be tightly sealed. It's a whole different world than when they built houses before that.
Right.
And these are all the considerations we get into beyond just heat pumps. Yeah.
Yeah. The guys in chat are still saying you're locked up a little bit. You can try to
Darn. Okay.
Your video.
Give it a go.
As you do that, I'll say, you know, so that's interesting. A couple $1,000 you're saying for that kind of seal up job, right? To kind of get somebody in there. Now, that's super convenient when you're moving in because you don't have any furniture in there yet, right? So, but for the average person who's already in a house, that might be a little less convenient, right? Because you got to move everything out. Is that right to do something like that?
Yeah, it's 1,800 square feet. So in theory, you could just put plastic over all your furniture, everything, horizontal surface. But you know, if you got a TV and stuff, you really don't want it. It's a little bit of a sticky residue. It's like white latex paint. If you had a spray paint can with white latex, putting a mist on it, it'll make a surface a little gummy. It can be wiped off with some soap and water, a little bit of elbow grease. So not ideal though. Yeah, generally they recommend it right after the thing is built or before you move in when there's no furniture. But we still had to cover all the flooring with plastic.
So a couple thousand for the service for them to plug up all the holes, which seems pretty reasonable to me. If you can't get to the outside of your house, something like that seems pretty reasonable, right? Of sealing up kind of the inside cracks, so to speak, right? But does you mentioned you've got now to get new air handlers, right? You have to get fresh air in there now that that house is sealed up. Is that included in that $3,000 or $4,000, or is that an additional charge?
No, I'm glad you asked. So it was about $3,000. A lot of it's labor preparing, always taping windows too. So if you have any leaks around windows, which were old, they hadn't been replaced with triple pane in our house yet. So he's got to tape around those, tape over the fireplace. You know, that's a giant hole, right, through your flue. So a lot of labor prep. The actual spraying was about an hour. And I think it was about 2 days of work. So yeah, $3,000, one person, expensive machinery in the garage, and a blower door, basically putting your house under pressure and
all pressure.
Holes at our high speed. Yeah. As far as ERV, no, that's so part of our HVAC system. So HVAC, meaning heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, that V. And yeah, when your house is tightly sealed, humans, like the room I'm in, is only 10 by 11. It fills with CO2 pretty quick when the door's closed and nothing's moving. That's why you get kind of groggy and you need fresh air blown in. And I've been using Home Assistant to try to automate some of that, going beyond what the Ecobees can do.
Yeah, the point of the video that Matt did was all this work worth it? Like, listen, nobody's, well, maybe you are, but nobody's more thorough than Matt Farrell. Like, Matt gives you all the details. He rolls through all the numbers. He's very meticulous about what he does. That's what I've always appreciated about his videos. As you think about the work that you've done and the length of time that you're going to be in that home, worth it to you, Paul?
To me, absolutely. To my wife, given the expense, how much it went over, there was some serious concerns. But also, it's taken us years to get the HVAC right because our contractor was not great. Matt even talked about that in his most recent podcast a little more. Super common, like people certified for geothermal that he has. Super rare. I have a colleague at work who's looking for a geothermal contractor. He found one in Connecticut. Those are big barriers. Yeah. So you've got dirt in your backyard that's 55 degrees. You can go 10 feet down, but no one knows how to install that and make it work for you. It's crazy, right? There's so much opportunity there. It's just fuel prices didn't cost so much. So the world changes to catch up with it eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. And we may see with current events that are happening as we record this March 12th, you know, we've seen probably a 50 or 60 or in some cases a dollar increase just in gasoline prices over the last 2 weeks as we're dealing with the current crisis. Of course, that's going to bleed into the economy in other places. All of a sudden, you start thinking about, you know, fuel prices have been pretty cheap. And when you start doing the comparisons against that, now you're on the East Coast, I'm in the Midwest. We like to burn air, you know, burn things into the air because, you know, the gas prices and electricity are pretty reasonable here in the Midwest. Not so much for you on the East Coast. Your improvements make a lot more sense as you do them. I try to have them make dollars and cents for me. And I always come up against the like it never pays for itself. You know, you do all these improvements and even over 10 or 12 or 15 years, you know, we're like you said, we're the same age. I'm thinking I'll be in this house maybe 15 more. Mm-hmm. So maybe they pay off. Maybe they don't. I don't know. That certainly that's something to think about, right? As you're thinking about spending, I may spend $3,000 to do what you talked about. I'd love to have that for $3,000. I'd do that tomorrow to have them come in and seal up those cracks in the house.
Let me reframe the payback thing. And this didn't really get covered. Yeah. Virtual power plants. So selling back to the grid, that's what made my house net zero energy cost per year.
Okay.
So net zero is kind of a vague term, like net zero cost, energy, environment, like what are you doing there? Well, dollars and cents. So how much are we paying to heat and cool and transportation? Because our cars are generally charged off of solar. That's it. So we've electrified all that, but the math doesn't work when electricity is about 30 cents a kilowatt hour here in Connecticut. I think it was a double or triple U. So
yeah,
I'm not claiming, nor is Matt, that this is easy. Him getting energy out of the dirt in his backyard is a better way to go because it's only 50, 60 degrees. It's only a 30 degree temperature difference. The heat pump needs to work. Mine needs to try to get the house up when it's 5 degrees Fahrenheit all the way to 70.
Yeah.
That's 65 degree difference. Yeah. So it costs more. And in the winter, the sun's low enough, you're not really going to have enough solar no matter how big your roof. You know, one story house like mine has a large roof, way bigger than a two story typically. Still, those are tough barriers. So virtual power plant gets me over $3,000 a year. That basically gets me through the winter. So $3,000 we earn in the summer selling back to our grid, that's the game changer. That's what made this math out where I could say to my wife, hey, hon, what if we die with no gas mowers, no snow blowers? And the whole new house doesn't burn anything. It's just all electric. If the math comes out to about $0 per year for living and driving our cars, that's how she nodded her head, like, okay, maybe. Because we were going to spend over $100,000 to our utility over living the next 12, 15 years living in Connecticut anyway, in the car. So if you look at all that, like over $100,000 to utility and for gas, or do we just put it in a roof and batteries? We went with that. Long-term outlook.
In that case, so here in Nebraska, this is where we're a little bit behind. We can't sell back to the utility. And in your case, the utility is actually a battery for you in some regards because you're able to sell back to them, right? You get credit for that solar that you're making. And you've got battery, but if you're able to sell extra back to them, then that kind of makes sense from an energy standpoint. Because you're right, you're going to go negative in the winter. And that's going to make up for itself. Do I have that right? Is that basically right?
Yep. So the utility, we only have a bill, what was it, 8 or 9 months of the year. The rest of the time, it's negative bill, right? We're just accruing. And then in winter, we start owing some money. In December, I think January, February, March are the 3 months we're paying bills. And those can be pretty large. Here's where the tuning comes in. If we can avoid resistive heat pumps, like ours are 2022 models, older refrigerant, the world has changed a lot. There's now new ones that operate. Mine's only 70% efficient at about 5 degrees Fahrenheit. new ones could be 100% efficient at 5 fair. So that can make a huge difference. And that's part of what we say in the video is get the latest tech in that thing, because then you can avoid the resistive heat, the toaster oven, the red coils of electricity that are terribly inefficient. You don't really want those going on. So if you can get your attic and your house insulated enough where you're only using heat pump, let's say 400 or 500 watts versus 10,000 watts for the resistive heat to keep going in cold weather. Now your bill is hundreds per month instead of over 1,000 in the winter. So the math, yeah, it's very important. Your installer needs to know what they're doing. You need to make sure they put something that's intended for cold weather, because even if it's only a few hours in the winter, which is what I was thinking until this winter, it's like, it only goes below 15 degrees for like 4 hours, the last two winters. Well, this winter, no. Yeah. Dozens of hours below 10 degrees Fahrenheit. It was crazy. And that's where we gobbled a lot of energy. I did the math. It looks like we came out similar to last winter because of all the major improvements I did to ductwork and all. So despite that incredible cold, did all right. And I haven't finished insulating. It was R40. I've been doing so much construction in the attic. A lot of it's probably only like R12 right now.
Yeah.
Once I actually finish the attic, it's going to be a lot better. How about you? You said you did your attic. Do you remember like how deep roughly?
Oh, no, I need to go up and look. It's pretty thick up there. And I'd love to go up and I probably should measure it some more. And I should probably do some inspection around the edges and some of those pieces, right? Just to make sure it's doing what it should. Paul, I got a question for you. So my garage, uninsulated, I got one concrete, you know, it's got a wall along the west side that's just a concrete brick wall, right? One brick thick. So it's not insulated, right? And that garage gets pretty cold, right? I've thought about, you know, there's a whole new generation of heat pump, right? Like units that I could, you know, the what do they call them? Split?
Mini split.
Yep. Mini splits. There we go. Some of them even have solar power connectors where you could power them on solar, and then when they don't have enough solar power, they'll kick it over to the grid, which would be that the west side of the house gets the most sun for us. The southern exposure is the best, but west for us is the second best.
Mm-hmm.
You think, I mean, if I could get that, if I could, and maybe throw a little insulation against the wall that's facing the, you know, that's uninsulated, maybe put up some styrofoam, some thick styrofoam on it. I think that'd be, you know, it's probably a $4,000 investment to do something like that. Think it's worth it?
Might be. Is the inside of that wall insulated, or it's brick and then just...
It's brick and then the garage and then brick to the house. And the problem is the cold air coming in, that garage gets so cold, it works its way into the house. And if I can keep that, the concrete mass in the garage, just a few degrees warmer, it'll have an effect on the basement, which has an effect on the upstairs of the house. I don't know. Your thoughts?
It depends. Let's see. If there's a wall cavity that can be filled by companies that do that, right? They'll make a bunch of like holes in your sheetrock, bottom and top, and then shove in the insulation and then patch up the hole and then you repaint the wall, whatever, that kind of thing. That could be a fairly cheap way to remediate it. Another thing to look at would be if the wind kind of pushes your garage door in, it's pretty leaky on those garage door seals, which is actually true in my house. They make little springy rollers that kind of push the door out and keep air from blowing right in. Because I noticed that in my house, it'll rarely go below freezing, even when it's 5 Fahrenheit. But if the wind's hitting the door right and slamming it, now it's sinking below freezing in the garage. That means, you know, ice on the floor.
For sure.
Those are little things. The bigger one, though, is probably the wall to the house. You just add another 2x4 wall on top of it, right? And insulate that. And that'll probably help a lot.
Wow.
Every house is different in this situation.
No,
right?
For sure. Yeah. And that garage is not necessarily, it's insulated, but it's really crappy insulation. And I thought about pulling down all the drywall and putting up new insulation to keep the upstairs kind of isolated from that cold. But then I thought, that's a lot of work, and I'm going to probably spend a couple $1,000 on materials for both insulation and then I got to re-sheetrock it. Why don't I just actually heat the garage with a heat pump that's pulling a little bit of, you know, that's pulling a little bit of solar power? And that may actually be a smarter decision than trying to insulate the whole thing, so to speak.
Well, depends how many. I'm thinking you need a lot of panels, and then winter months is when you're trying to heat, and that's when there's less. It's a little tough. You're probably using a fair amount of grid power. I don't know. I think you'd probably want to look at what has the most effective, like if you have a FLIR thermal camera, look at the walls.
Yeah.
You'd experiment, put in some foam board 2-inch with metallized side and just show that against the wall.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, experiment.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've got a lot of different options to both put rigid insulation against the outside wall. To your point, the garage door is a absolute entry point, right? I've done everything I can to seal that up. Fortunately, it faces south. And so the north winds usually are what get us, right? We get these really, really cold north winds that come in. So actually, I don't lose a lot of heat through the garage door, I'm really, really fortunate, because it's kind of, and then part of it's buried, right? Part of it's against the house, and we get some dirt insulation from the outside to support it. But I have two options. One is rip down the ceiling in there and throw up insulation and re-drywall it, which is just a freaking mess. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, I'm looking for a cheaper source of heat. If I could get some solar power in the afternoons and then pull some grid in the evenings to keep that garage 50 degrees instead of 30 degrees, that might help with some of the, because those floors above it get fairly cold, you know?
Okay, so you have living space above too. So yeah, at least your energy will be going towards some humans, not just a subtle difference to one wall that adjoins a kitchen or something. It's substantial, your garage, is what you're saying. Okay, yeah, it's a different, that might make it help a little. Let's see, big picture. We're talking about like heat pump water heaters. Why did that spark something in me like 7-8 years ago? The same thing that's in you right now. We're starting to measure the watts of everything.
Yeah.
It's because a couple of things. It dehumidified my basement. So let me unplug a dehumidifier that I was spending about $100 per summer to keep the basement from getting musty. Well, a heat pump water heater was basically working out great. It cooled the basement a little in the summer. So instead of 74 and a little muggy, it was drier and in the 60s. Now, in the winter, that's not ideal. Your basement ends up colder. And in this house, that's the case. My basement gets down to 54 degrees. It's a one-story house. And the basement's not insulated. The floor below me. That means the entire house, 1,800 square feet, are fighting a cold floor. Yeah. So every house is different. And cooling off my basement with a heat pump water heater, not ideal always. But it's a large basement area, and we're not living down there. It's not that big a deal. But these are all little things to think about. And they're not so little. They're way more than the computers and stuff you and I buy, right? We talk about NASs and Synology arrays. And you realize, oh yeah, the other part of my house and living and driving cars is way more expensive than this other stuff we nerd out on. And that's part of why I've been tackling that. My wife and I are thinking, okay, where do we live next? And how do we make it somewhat affordable to live there for hopefully decades, right?
Yeah.
And that's what kind of got me thinking this whole thing, like, how do we want to do it? And I think a lot of people are thinking the same kind of thing, especially, you know, well, things change. Some states you can't even build natural gas. You can't build new construction with natural gas. So they're going heat pump and induction stoves anyway. The world is changing that way.
For sure. Yeah. I replaced my water heater in 24, I think. No, maybe it was 25. Maybe it was last year.
Okay.
And I seriously contemplated going the heat pump model, where there's a heat pump on top of it, like what you said. At the end of the day, I did the math, and I was kind of like, based on my situation, it just made more sense to put in a standard water heater in our basement. Really wanted to go that route. I had a hard time justifying it, but I'm glad you continue to talk about it. 'Cause I think, like in your case, I actually don't suffer from a humidity problem down here. Like, it's super dry, which is kind of weird. Right. But We don't have that. I don't. It's in a spot where we're in a spot where natural gas is very, very reasonable. Mm. And so, right, it's a natural gas heater. It responds quickly. It's, you know, some of those kinds of things. But now that I did it, I was like, oh, I got to tell Paul I didn't do it.
Like, oh, no, that's all right. I mean, every state's different. Like Home Depot and Lowe's here, it's going to be $2,000 for a hyperelectric water heater and about $1,000 for an electric one.
Yeah.
But you can get that money off at the cash register. You
pull
this little pull tab, or you can do it online. They made things easier in some states where, because that's when that thing goes, you're not taking a shower the next morning, right? You're trying to replace it in a hurry, and it's a snap decision. Yeah. The thing that makes a huge difference is if they cost about the same and you're going to own it for 15, 20 years, that's when you can make a dent in how people behave. Because this stuff you can't install spontaneously. Going all electric with our house, that wasn't that's not something quick. The furnace dies at 30-year-old in your basement, and it's 12 degrees out, you're probably not converting to a heat pump at that point, because you're probably looking at new ductwork. No. If a house is built 10, 20 years ago, the only ductwork in New England is meant for air conditioning. That's not going to be enough for a 70 degree difference between indoors and outdoors. So it's an all new ductwork. It's expensive. Yep. And you got to think ahead. I don't mean to be daunting in the video, but it helps for, because I didn't know anything about any of this when I was researching it in 2022. So just best to go in with your eyes open and have an idea that you're talking some serious labor for these kind of projects. It's not just the heat pumps themselves.
Yeah. And you mentioned contractors a few minutes ago when we had our air conditioner replaced just 2 years ago. So since the last time I talked to you, the contractor who I really like, our HVAC service, I really like these guys. They're fair and they're reasonable and they're friends. I've gotten to know them over the years. They service our equipment twice a year. So I'm talking to the guy and I'm like, what do you think about a heat pump? He's like, yeah, I don't like them. And at that point, I was like, I'm not going to get this past this guy. I'm going to have to break up. Yeah. I'm going to have to break up with him to get my fit, you know, and I chose the relationship. I was like, okay, I'll take the three SEER air conditioner that's out there. Again, electricity is 12 cents a kilowatt hour. So like, you know,
mine's 30. So
right. Right. About that, I'm kind of fortunate. You mentioned this a little bit earlier. You know, as soon as I started messing around with solar last summer and then put panels on the front of the house, they're on the porch. I don't have them on the roof yet. I don't know if I'll do that, but I started thinking about every kilowatt that I use at this, like that exercise all by itself made me super conscious of all the stuff that I'm using. At what, like it's certainly for you too, what rate or what do you use to measure your experience with that? I mean, are you checking it every day? What are you using to kind of check your usage of it? Is it working right? I know you've had some problems with your air handler and air exchange and some of those kinds of things that you've been checking all the time. What's been working for you?
All right. Well, in the previous house, it was Sense, whole home energy monitoring. That's clamps that go around your mains that come into your house. And it's just guessing at, oh, that looks like a fridge. It has got a quick spike and then it goes at 300 watts for a few hours and turns off. Like it guesses what your appliances are and tries to give you a sense of, yes, your fridge uses this and your electric car uses that. But it was not very accurate. And it's only like $250, I think, $200, something like that. So moving to this house, getting a SPAN smart panel lets you see every circuit. Okay, sounds good. It lets you see 240 volt circuits like oven or heat pumps, heating and cooling a house. Having visibility into exactly what's going on and how long the resistive heat we're talking about is, the heat strips, they call them, was key. How else? You can't just wait for a $1,500 bill from your utility to come in this January to say, oh, that tuning I did in the EQB thermostat was wrong. You kind of need to know way before that. And I learned that the first winter. And the first month, the EQB thermostat, consumer product, it ships at 40 degrees saying, oh, turn off the heat pump at 40 and just go with resistive heat below 40 Fahrenheit. Well, my first bill was over $1,000. My wife and I were not pleased. I'd realized, okay, can't trust what the HVAC people did. Now it's time for me to dig in and learn it. So anyhow, that's that.
Paul, hold on, before you move on, the SPAN panel. I think, you know, I've seen these are, they're fairly new on the scene, right? You talked about the Sense measurement of that. This SPAN panel kind of takes over your whole, I mean, it is your panel. Yep. I mean, how expensive is, I mean, you're replacing your panel with this thing, right?
Yeah, they were like $4,000, I think we got it. Now they're down to $3,000. Mine was 32 circuit breaker spots. So they had to use a lot of double poles. And Jim, you sound like you have an electrical background. 32 spots for 1,800 square feet sounds fine, but when you put in heat pumps and the heat pump water heater and two EVs charging, 40 amp, it's you're using up the circuit breakers.
Yeah, for sure.
So why is that interesting? Well, SPAN, it's not just about turning on and off breakers remotely with your phone. That'll work over cellular if your Wi-Fi croaks. That's important, right? You have to think about disaster when things are wrong. It's also about how do you manage energy? Let's say you're on vacation in February. Power goes out in your house for a day or two. You don't want your pipes to freeze. How do you manage that? Well, you want it to immediately turn off circuits for things it doesn't need. Oven, dryer, microwave, stuff that just is no use in a house when you lost power in winter. You just want to limp along and make sure your fridge food stays okay and you don't burst your pipes. Now, in a house that has solar with batteries, the next day when the sun comes up and there's solar, okay, you're trying to survive to the next day that the heat and get some energy back in if the power's still out in the house. So that's kind of how I had to think about the design of the house. And we end up with two heat pumps for resilience and redundancy, but also the span panel is the smarts. It's a $3,000 200 amp panel that I have full control over. I can see everything that's going on in every circuit. Now, TP-Link is a little module, EP25. They're Wi-Fi. I wish they were mat or a thread now, but got a lot of those around the house for smaller things that, you know, you got a kitchen circuit breaker, it's going to have 10, 15 things on there. So you kind of want to get a little more granular. But you go for the heavy hitters first. And even something like leaving a home server on that's only 110 watts or something, or 80 watts, whatever it is, with a couple spinning 3.5 drives in there. It isn't that much, but then you have to do the math. Oh, but it's on 24/7, right? And then you realize, oh, actually.
That's crazy. Listen, yeah. I did not think about my home server usage that way until I started measuring it.
Yep.
And then I'm like, 100 watts continuously. Like,
yeah,
that's actually a lot when you think about the usage that it is there. It's made me reconsider everything. So, you know, I'm to the point now, like I have an Unraid box. I only run it when I need it, to be honest. Now, some folks in the last show, we were talking about that. And some folks were like, I don't want to turn those drives off because I'm afraid they won't come back on. Well, then maybe you need better drives. But I am literally running that thing. I use it. I spin it up when I need it. I'm not backing up stuff to it enough in my situation that it needs to be on all the time. So I'm shutting it off.
You know? So, Jim, do you remember 10 years ago, we met in Indianapolis. I brought my little home server, a little super micro cube. That's 10 years ago. 10 gig Ethernet, M.2 NVMe.
Yeah.
That was pretty darn leading edge then. And it burned about 60 watts with nothing in it. You added a bunch of drives. You could get up to maybe 110. But as I've always done my website, which is now 14 years old, some of the earliest videos, I'd always get a watt meter out and get an idea of what does it cost to run it in Connecticut. Because a lot of my colleagues living elsewhere in the United States, they would buy a hand-me-down Dell server for $300 off of eBay.
Yeah.
But if you did the math, they were spending $600 a year in electricity for that thing.
Yeah.
So that never worked for me. I'm like, I can't say to my wife, I'm going to leave this thing on. And I needed to access it. So leaving a device at 100 watts on all year where I was constantly pulling files, doing VMs, all that stuff seemed reasonable. So I've always thought that way, but most people don't. Kind of like a cell phone plan or whatever. Yeah. What's it going to cost to own this thing for the next 5 years? Most people just don't think about that. I get it.
Yeah.
But I've learned, like you said, I kind of need to, because you see your bill go up when you buy something and then you want to know what does it mean.
Yeah. When you measure, you know, there's a saying in management, you have to inspect what you expect. And it's as I started getting into this management of these, all of a sudden you're like, do I really need that on for, you know, I've been running through the pandemic. I never thought about the power I was using. I just turned stuff on. I have 11 monitors down here that I use, right? And I never thought they're 25 watts each, right? Yeah. And do I need them on all the time? I need to find some smarter ways to do that. With your span panel, and you were talking about power outages. Now, I always think, too, that we have more power outages than we actually do. I maybe suffer a long-term power outage maybe once every 4 years, like just to be transparent on that. But it sounds like for you, Paul, that maybe you guys there in Connecticut have a few, when the weather gets bad, you have a few more outages. Have you thought about the, you know, generator? So when you are gone, you can fire that up, feed it in through the panel and cause you're in a perfect situation for that. Or are you already doing that?
Well, I remember when I said the conversation with my wife in 2022 was, how about no more oil changes, no more anything? Well, we left the generator behind and sold it with the house. We moved away. We went to batteries. And you got into EcoFlow. And
yeah, I do.
Yeah, we kind of segue to that too. Look at that, 50 minutes of heat pumps and energy.
So no, this is great. This is great.
There's all these related topics of electronics to make us work. And it's more about, as you get older, you really don't want a disaster affecting your life profoundly, like a leaking fireplace or stuff. We went through stuff in the old house that it's kind of miserable. We finally got an OLED TV on Christmas the day before. There was a roof leak, leaked right in the, you know, 4 millimeter thin TV, and it happened to drip right on it. It's like, geez, one day old. These stupid little things, and you're like, you just don't want that kind of drama. And that got fixed, and you know. So when we think about this house, we're trying to get it right. And we're like, okay, 30 years, there was one power outage, like 5 or 6 days and 8 days from my parents living across town. That's bad. But it was October. So it wasn't life changing. People's pipes weren't burst, but it was a good eye opener that, oh, the utility has a lot of trees to cut down. There's a lot of vulnerability in the state for above ground wiring. Yeah. And it just kind of had my wife thinking, yeah, whatever you design, it needs to not burst the pipes. And I could not assure that, oh, we're going to live comfy and just fine without any backup system. No, I couldn't say that. All I could say is we'd limp along with one out of the two heat pumps running for the bedroom, keep the house from pipes bursting, and limp along until the next day of sun, which is generally the day after a heavy snowstorm.
Yeah.
So that's the best I could do. We lived here 30 years. We didn't have anything but more than a few hours and then one time 5 days. So I think we'll be okay. You know, it's, you're taking a risk in anything, but that's how it went. Yep. You got to, it depends on where you live.
When yeah, spend we, money. We get 4 or 5 days every 3 to 5 years. And those three to, because it's always a, it's usually a tornado, right? That's here in Nebraska. Like if you're going to go down, we're going to have a tornado that's going to wipe out a bunch of power lines that they're going to, it's going to take 3 to 4 days to bring them back up. And maybe it's not every three, maybe it's every 6 or 7, but still those moments drive me insane. Like, I'm like, I'll do anything to not have the food in my fridge spoil, or because it's always for us, it's always in the summer. You're always winter. You've said a dozen times already, you're worried about your pipes freezing. We don't struggle with that here. What we struggle with is the heat in the summer. You know, you have a tornado come through or whatever, right? Severe weather rips out the power lines, takes stuff down, takes 3 or 4 days to get it back. It's hot. And then you can't sleep. And imagine not sleeping for 3 or 4 days, right? You know, because it's so hot.
I'm glad you brought that up. So the October storm was unique in that it was heavy snow with leaves still in the trees. Oh, yeah. So it brought down everything. Yeah. It was a good wake-up call for the utility, like, oh boy, this is dangerous. And here's the thing. The gas trucks couldn't get in from New Jersey to refill the gas stations for the ones that had power. So I had to drive far to refill the generator every 8 hours. So having a gas generator was no joy to keep the food alive for my parents' house in 5 days. So that was eye-opening. Summer, when it happened, we had a power outage. Yeah, I slept in my electric car in the garage. It was comfortable. I mean, the air conditioning, because like you just said, the house is steaming hot. And, you know, it's pulled down the seats when your eyes are closed. It's not as, you know.
No.
Anyhow.
Yeah.
Everywhere, it depends where you live. Yep. Your tolerance, this kind of thing. But usually just a few hours where I live. So not that big a deal. We can make it without a generator. Most people would want natural gas or a generator so they don't have to fill it. But you're looking at, you know, $5,000 minimum plus install. And we were just like, no, we're not going to do it in your house.
Yeah. So. I bought a gas generator at the beginning of the pandemic, right? And I was like, well, maybe it's time to get one of these. You know, who knows where the world is going at this point? It's 6 years old. I've run it maybe 100 or 200 hours just on various startups and run it for various things just to keep it running. I bought a big gas tank that I could, for disasters like this, where I could get, I could fill up a 15-gallon tank once. It'll run for 24 or 48 hours. But it's still one of those things that now I'm kind of thinking like, I should have bought the natural gas one that I could plumb it out. Not have to worry about, you know, because those gas ones you want to run from time to time, right? You know.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing too with the local gas stations, electricity was needed for the pumps. I had to drive quite far to find a gas station actually open. But even hospitals had like 2 days of diesel fuel to run their generators. They were in trouble. You got patients there, and the trucks couldn't get from New Jersey to refill them. Like it was really, really interesting. Okay, this is a good segue. Yep. UPSs. I spent a lot of money on cyber power, and then before that, APC brand all those years. Yeah. I just tossed them all. I got rid of 11 of them and went to the dump and cut off the cords. It felt so good. So I went to, like you, let's go with LFP cells in a little thing that's meant for camping. And there's only one that had a quick enough turnover where my framework desktop PC that I bought just before AI took over RAM prices and an 8 terabyte NVMe drive about a year ago. That they doubled in price in the last few months. Right. So I bought a framework desktop to replace that 10-year-old Supermicro. I had a good run with it. And what happened? The Powerwall batteries do not kick in quite enough to keep that going. So of the whole house, the oven will blink the clock. All the lights stay on. Nothing else notices. The TV, everything's fine. But a computer is a little more sensitive and the power supply, the Powerwall wouldn't quite kick on fast enough. So I'm like, you know what? I should probably condition it. Just get one for just the stuff that matters. My Ubiquiti networking stuff, a fiber optic connection to the internet, and the framework desktop PC. That's it. And that's what's on there. So now I've gone with that, and it was from Costco. I think it was $200 something. It's not for length. It's just going to shut down the computer soon. All it needs to do is ride out that little cutover period where the lights flicker. And I'm really happy with that. And the house is a lot simpler and no more lead acid batteries replaced every 2-3 years. Yeah. That was getting ridiculous.
Yeah, I do. I agree with you. I think the new battery, the camping batteries, the solar generators, as they're saying, they're twice as expensive, right? I mean, this is the thing. If you get an APC, they're $200. You're going to spend $400 or $500 to get a similar, although I shouldn't say similar, it's going to last you four times longer. But yes, Paul, I've been saying this for a long time. I think the new world for a backup is these new lithium batteries, not necessarily the, you know, continuing to buy these lead acid, you know, APC batteries. And I've loved it. I mean, I won't go back. I too have gotten rid of all my APCs. They're gone. And I took them to Batteries Plus. You know, we have a Batteries Plus store here. They'll just take them for you. Like, you know, just no questions asked. Just drop them off. Will you recycle this? They're like, absolutely. You don't have to buy anything. They don't charge you anything for them. Just take them in. They don't test them. They're just like, get rid of these things.
So mine was called the EcoFlow River 3.
Yeah.
I used 3 different AI engines to find this. Like, hey, here's the Framework Desktop, a popular AI AMD Ryzen machine. My work laptop, my desktop, they're all AMD now, right? That's today's world. And who can the power supply comes with? What is it? Who makes it? Who OEMs it for Framework? And what can it handle as far as a cutover time? What camping style battery will actually handle it? Well, this EcoFlow from Costco for $200 did the job. And it comes with a little portable battery pack for extra power during a power outage. And that was a win. Not perfect. I can't put my Dell 42-inch monitor that's in front of me now. That's a 5K monitor, which I love. It took 12 years of my old monitor, 2560, 1440, to finally move to 5K last year. And can't protect that. If I put that on there, if the thing's doing a little AI compute and a local LLM or something, meaning it's not burning idle 20, 30 watts, but now it's cranked up to 100 something, and the monitor's on, well, guess what? Now it abruptly shuts off if I test it with a power cutover. So these little things, you got to test to make sure you get it right. But the common theme here is less complexity, less things to fiddle with, and this thing should last 8 or 10 years with that battery in there. And it's LFP, the safer one that's way less likely to cause fires or problems. And that was another project. First Alert fire detectors, had 12 of them in this house. Oh my gosh, Jim, they're all going to like Nest style smart ones and they want $150. So First Alert is discontinuing their stuff that you can buy affordably at Home Depot and Lowe's and the interconnected ones, and they're going to new expensive smart ones. But so that was another project. How do you have protection in the garage, which can get down to about 25 Fahrenheit? Local codes want fire detection in your garage that's interconnected with the rest of your house when you have batteries in there. In my case, 4 power walls. And the inspector did want to see a fire detector. Well, none of them are rated for outdoor use, or that's too cold. They're not supposed to be in an environment. Well, there's one that works that way. So I bought one of the few left in America before it went out of sale, and it interconnects with my existing First Alert OneLink system, so it announces through the whole house. But man, that was just another one of those projects. Should be simple, turned into another 3 or 4 hour AI investigation.
Yeah.
Through trying 3 or 4 AIs to see if they all agreed, yep, this is a product to buy.
Is the battery the problem at that point because it gets so cold, or is it
the device? So it's looking for smoldering. It has to use different tech than stuff that's in your room temperature house, basically. So that's another rabbit hole. So this is in my article, 2025 Home Tech Refresh, where I just covered what I do in 2025 to just replace all the old junk. I had a bunch of old networking from Netgear and others, and it was starting to give me trouble. A network switch would just go offline. The whole house is off internet. And I look at the date, and it's like, oh man, I wrote about that on my own blog 12 years ago. It's time. So I went 10 gig for the whole house and ripped it out and went with Ubiquiti. And I know you've talked about that too, Jim.
Yeah, we did. Did. You like it? You like it? Or is that is that my next move, Paul? Is that like went to replace my Bitdefender box? I've already put the router in my Amazon, buy later thing because I'm watching the prices on it. But is that my next move?
Yeah, a lot of people in IT, day jobs like mine, very common, right? And Europe, there's Rufus is a brand, right? Every country, a little different in different pockets of the world. But Ubiquiti, it's nice to have other people I know that also use it. Was it hard to learn? A little, but you're more of person. You're not your average guy on your networking, Jim. You play with a firewall. You've actually click on various stuff. You install it and all that. So you'd be absolutely comfortable. For Wi-Fi 7, I'd say we're blazing new trails there. The world is not really ready. But I'm much happier there than with Eero, because now it's a power Ethernet device. This little Frisbee that I installed, I'd have two in my house. They hand off very smoothly between each other. I never got that working very well with an Eero, because Eero was never really meant for a wired backhaul. It was so not meant for it. When Eero first year came out with those, they're like, oh no, just plug one into the router. That's your main Eero. That becomes your DHCP server. The other ones, you don't want Ethernet on there. And I discovered that the hard way, because my Ecobee thermostats in the old house, they'd have the duplicate IP. There'd be two DHCP servers given out, and they would give out the same IP. I'm like, what's going on? The Eero was that, like a lot of those consumer ones, just they don't expect you to wire backhaul. They just want you to do a mesh. I'm like, well, no, but I've got Ethernet in that room. I don't want that. So I'm very happy with that for Netgear, for Ubiquiti and Unify, and to have a very lovely interface to manage it all, to show all the devices, update the firmware. And then finally, here's the kicker. Just when I was getting finally fiber optic might come to my neighborhood, it looked like Go NetSpeed might come. It ended up being Frontier Fiber that beat them to it. But as I was getting ready for that, I'm like, I'm replacing all the networking and I'm getting a fiber capable switch just in case we can go well beyond a DOCSIS cable modem, which was capped at 1 gig. And sure enough, it was out of stock for months, waiting and waiting for Ubiquiti to come out with this cloud gateway fiber. Let me look at the price, but it was pretty reasonable and it can handle 5 gig even with packet inspection on. And what do you know? Now I have 5 gig connection. Frontier moved to my street and I was like the second one installing. The 2 weeks after I installed stringing fiber along the street. It was a big year for tech where it felt really good to just replace the old stuff that needed to go, because it really was starting to fail. It wasn't just like, it would be nice. We kind of moved all that gear over in a hurry in 2022, but didn't replace anything. Right. And then it felt really good to just get all new everything. And I already had 10 gig capable of wiring. So it was really a matter of replacing the switch. And in a one-story house, pretty easy to just home run everything. It's simple. I don't have little switches over the house and break out and just one device in the basement.
Get in your attic for that?
Mostly basement. So it's a full basement where I can just go up a wall and So that's been
So basement with just a single story above it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But I can get in the attic too if I need to. Like, I wanted to dump Ring. I am not happy with Jamie Siminoff and Ring.
Oh, wow.
So you and I have talked to them. You've interviewed him. In the early days, he answered me when I said, hey, I'm hearing someone else's audio. There's a little cross-channel leakage there. It wasn't like I was seeing someone else's video, but I reported to Ring, and he was a little guy then. He talked to you. He answered me on an article I had. But now, seeing the way he's going, oh boy, I think I'm getting Ubiquiti. That's going to be about $1,000 to replace 4 or 5 cameras. Not fun, because I do like the Ring. The floodlight turns on when you come in the driveway. They're connected to Lutron Caseta system, which means it turns on my driveway lights from dim accent lighting to, oh, someone's walking up into the house or driving in the driveway. Let's put it on a full bright for 50 minutes. Super easy. You don't need Home Assistant or anything. Just Lutron has a little deal with Ring. Make it super easy to turn on a little thing and it works flawless. It moved in the house over 3.5 years ago, and it's just every time you come home, garage lights pop on, driveway lights pop on. Mm-hmm. 15 minutes later, they all go back to where they were. Mm-hmm. Love that. So, maybe I shouldn't get into why. It's just not good. I'm not happy. It's the encrapification of everything. Thing is doing it like everyone else.
They got busted for opening up. They were trying to be helpful. Hey, if your dog's lost, we'll turn on all the cameras to find them. And it sounds great on the surface, right? But then you start thinking about the security ramifications of that, of like, is that what we really want? They rolled out, Ring rolled out their AI bit, right? So now when my alert notifications come on, it says a person in a blue shirt is doing something in your garage or whatever, right? It tries to do this AI-ification to it. And it's kind of cool. I'm not going to continue. It's on a trial basis, and then I'd have to pay for it. I'm not going to pay for that. Like, that doesn't get me there. But it's too bad, because they're trying to be helpful. I mean, it seems like on the surface that would be helpful. But boy, did that get a backlash from the tech community, right?
Yep. And speaking of camera quality, interesting segue. Navamo. Remember that name? Mower.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah,
robotic
yeah, yeah.
mower.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And you've had a guest talking about it. Similar model. This is for, I haven't talked about this in any articles or anything anywhere. I had a Navamo to test. Had. It was fun. It was good. But, you know, sometimes things go horribly wrong at the worst possible time and place. Well,
oh, no. You didn't lose any limbs, did you?
No, no, no. It's just little tiny, it's basically single edge blades around a plastic, a disc underneath, right? It was doing a good job and doing a perfect pattern. It's like, wow, centimeter precision GPS. It was impressive to see the tech, right? Not a unit I spent my own money on. It's cool to try. But here's what happened, Jim. And the cameras are going to play into it. You know, wait for that. All right. I activated the system where it's going to be a brick if it goes outside the perimeter of your house. Okay, fine. So I wasn't, you know, you're deploying this thing and you're thinking, yeah, okay, maybe daytime only. I start building confidence that this thing works. All right, maybe let it run at night. It seems to be doing great. All I did was draw the perimeter, driving around with my phone to draw the perimeter and let it deal with the whole inside of the house. It's only like a quarter acre. and my wife's expressing a little bit of unease when she sees it diagonally going across the backyard at night. She's like, really? You know, run at night? Little risk or whatever. Well, what does it decide to do? It goes and charges itself and then reruns at night, goes to the front yard at night, which I should have programmed and said, no, let's not do this at night. So she was right, of course. Then you can see it on the Ring camera. Its lights blinking. Where does it die? It dies early at like 2 a.m. on a Sunday morning, right at the curb. So you can guess where this story is going. You see it then sitting there stuck. The app doesn't alert me or anything. Its light slowly dims until it stops flashing as it croaks.
Yeah.
So now it has no GPS, no anti-theft. So what happens on a Sunday morning when someone sees this bright orange, beautiful $3,000 thing? It's gone. It's stolen. Oh. And the Ring camera captured it, but it's so blurry you can't tell anything.
Oh.
And it's not really a theft. It's more like a donation. People see stuff at your curb on a Sunday and a weekend. Oh.
Right.
And that's the end of that
story. They're getting rid of it.
Oh, correct. So I had so much product feedback, Jim. I had me spinning like, oh my God, the second you pick it up, it needs to have a backup battery. It needs to announce this thing does not work as soon as you remove from the property. Like there's no display in it that tells you. There's no Apple AirTag, which I should have put in there, right?
Yeah.
But what would it do? What am I going to do? Have the police knock on some dad who thought he was just getting a cool thing that he could play with? It's not really theft. It's just, it was the worst possible way for it to die. So it's an epic fail, but I tell you the story because someone listening might be like, yeah, is my neighborhood good with a $3,000 device? Don't run it at night. And you probably want to be home and that loses some of the convenience.
Do you have to watch him? Like, this story?
I trusted it too much. Okay. No, I was doing great without watching it. Sorry, you were asking something.
You answered it. I was like,
it'd be boring when.
It's
fun for the first 50 minutes. It's amazing to watch it. But then you start trusting it, and I obviously trusted too much. So yeah, naive me confessing. I feel pretty dumb and felt horrible about it. And of course,
I'm sorry.
It was 3,000, whatever. The other thing is too, the battery can't be used like proprietary. Someone could crack it open. They're really not gonna be able to do much with it. It's just such a shame. It's $3,000 basically flushed and
lost
and recycled.
Yeah.
So that's a hurdle. And now they got $7,000 winter ones. Yarbo, Tom Malagni, who does a bunch of EV charging videos.
Yep.
He's millions of hits with that thing showing in his New Jersey home, that 300-foot driveway, and he handled it.
Yeah.
It's impressive. Matt Farrell's tried one of those, by the way, too. Yarbo wasn't so great 3-4 years ago. Anyhow, I share that because I know you talked about mowers for years, Jim. You wanted to like design one, whatever. And there's the societal, like social aspect that is the harder part. It's not the tech necessarily.
I like mowing my lawn.
Oh, that's
I'll
great.
Be honest. I talk a big game of mowers, and then I think about it. I'm like, no, I could just keep mowing my lawn. You know, and Sammy, my daughter, said to me, "Dad, it's like this is one of the things that you get exercise with." You know, I was like, she's kind of right. I don't have a huge yard, and so I did think about the Yarbos this winter when I was like, you know, boy, that'd be nice to have the snowblower attachment and to put it in winter mode and have it clear my driveway. You know what happened? We've had one big storm this year, and my neighbor came and cleared it before I could get out there. I was like, who needs a Yarbo when your neighbors? I have great neighbors. And so they just, you know, he came over and cleared it before I could even get out of the house. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe I don't need, but I do think there's a situation. Listen, not everybody has the neighbors I have. I think those could be really, really helpful for people who need that. Snow blowing is serious business. Shoveling snow can kill you.
A lot of people have heart attacks, I guess, to get over with that, right? Because it's very cold. Hey, speaking of which, 5 degrees Fahrenheit, 30 mile an hour winds. I was at Costco with my wife. We bought electric gloves because I'm out there. It was quite a winter. Like, now it's an Ego snowblower. Yeah. So electric, finally. Here at Lowe's, it's taken over. It's a huge section.
Really?
A lot of electric.
And that's it works for you. You get enough time on it. You don't.
Yeah, it's now the fourth winter. Finally got to use it. It was a brutal winter. Yeah. And here's the answer. Those batteries expensive. Good thing I bought 4 batteries with the mower. Okay. 2 of them go in the snowblower. When those are depleted, the second 2 go in, the others go in a charger. But you're not going to be charging for another 4 or 5 hours. I don't have a dual charger. It charges one at a time. I literally had to go out at 8 p.m., 2 a.m., and again at 8 a.m. the next morning to get this 17-inch storm done. So it was light and powdery. So the end of the driveway, but where the street plows onto your driveway and it's very thick, not that bad. 5 degrees. It was more just your hands going to make it than everything else. It was rough. But so that was taxing. So then you're thinking about, well, okay, as you get older, is this what I'm doing? 20, yes, that was a challenge. But the other 3 winters were pretty much nothing. 3-4 inches. I barely used it.
Do you need another charger? Would you buy it?
Yeah, that would be smart. They're not cheap either. So everything with Ego, they're not lead acid though. These batteries should last 6-8 years. They're not, they're expensive. Yeah. So yes, Ego success story. But it's different. You're not just filling it with a gas tank and continuing 2 or 3 hours snow blowing. No, you're going to deplete the batteries. But that's why I went out several times, notice. If I went out once, I would have spent the whole Saturday or Sunday. Actually, it was a Monday, work and stuff, right?
Yeah,
so it was I had to get on top of it. Yeah, so Sunday night, trying to get ready for work shift at 8 a.m. Monday, it was a challenge.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up. Hey, Jim.
Your storm, that storm came through. That was the set, it came through here first. And we got, that was the 7 inches of snow. That was on a Friday. And I was thinking, like, I stayed home from work and I'm like, okay, I'll clear it at noon. It'll be just fine. And before I could get out there, my neighbors, we've got a bunch of, everybody's got a gas mower here. It's Nebraska, right? And the guys literally race to see who can get out first to clear the neighbor's driveway. It's a great place to live. Sorry, I interrupted you,
Paul. No, it's all good. I'll leave you with this thought. Stalling at the end of the driveway when you hit slush, the next door, another 14-incher, but much heavier, around 30 degrees this time. Whole different challenge. I'm like, well, this is the ultimate winter torture test of heat pumps and snowblowers. Mm. Well, I can, you want to shake out the kinks. And this was good for me, right? We lived here 4 years. Finally, something's finding out where my shortcomings are and how everything's designed. I see that as a good thing. Just like with IT and computer testing. You torture test it for the first month to make sure it doesn't croak. Probably good for 5 to 10 years. Well, same deal. And the torque is incredible on electric mower, electric snowblower and electric mower. You're not stalling. You're not pulling a ripcord or replacing a lead acid battery to hit the starter over and over. I love all that, Pat. And Matt Farrell's quite happy with his Ego as well. So success story, but it's not a tractor. It doesn't have tractor tank wheels. It would be better. If you're older, you want a heavier one with like tractor wheels. That'll just do the work for you. For now, it's pretty lightweight. So it kind of tends to ride up on top of the snow at the end of the drive when you're digging in and shoving your whole torso in. So snow blowing is heavy work for people listening. I've never done it. The machine's not doing all the work.
Yeah.
Unless you have like a $3,000 one that's built like a tank and it's very heavy.
Well, and I'm in that situation right now. I broke my snowblower housing this year, right? And so been talking about this. I could go, the EV route, or I could go the Aaron's heavy tank wheels. You know, they're about the same price, to be honest. From that standpoint here. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm gonna do. I may not buy anything, to be honest with you. I got neighbors.
You're gonna be baking cookies or something.
I don't. Yeah, just send them, buy them cigars. I mean, they'd take cigars over to them, and they're like, thanks. Or a bottle of whiskey or a 6-pack of beer, and they're pretty fine with that. So
Jim, do you have Menards by you?
Oh yeah, for sure.
So what do they go big electric with Ego or some other brand?
Oh, no, yeah, no, they have those. They have those. Okay. But they have the Aaron's brand as well. I've been thinking about getting the Aaron's, the orange Aaron's brand. Yeah. They're the tank. That's the tank that will move your snow. Ed Sullivan, who I talk to all the time, that's his favorite brand. So
you're reminding me, 15 years ago, roughly, I was in UK for work, Hursley, England, outside of London. And when I do a work trip like that, finally one night after getting the work done, I go to the local store that's like a Home Depot, just see how different it is. The electrical, I was fascinated. Like, I don't get to go to Europe very often, only a few times, a handful of times. And it was just amazing. And you go to the mower aisle where they have like 1/8 of an acre lots in the UK. They had hover mowers, Jim. Hover mowers that had no wheels. So you just kind of,
oh yeah.
Yeah, hover your mower over the front lawn to get it done in a hurry. And I'm just like, oh my God, feet, cats, dog. I'm thinking all the worst. But I had no idea that existed in the world. And to me, that's actually the fun part of a wacky yeah. business trip. Like, I try to visit.
There were hover motors in the States in the 80s. That was okay.
I had no idea.
It was kind of a thing for a while. It didn't last very long for all those same reasons that you say. Like, cats, dogs, feet, all those same reasons. Paul, before we wrap this up, I got one question for you. We'll bring this in for a landing here. Ram prices. I mean, in the last 6 months, right, Ram memory with all the AI stuff's gotten out of control. You're a PC builder. You mentioned it a couple times on this show. You've built your own stuff. How are you feeling right now about where everything is? If I were wanting to build a PC, what kind of advice would you give me at this point? Do I just wait, or what's your advice?
All right. Alan Maventano, he was at PC Perspective for years, like the number one preeminent world's expert on NVMe drives. I got to know him. He lives in Kentucky. He's an awesome guy. Went off to work at Intel. And now Solidine, and those are the controllers for SSDs. Brilliant guy. The people at PC Perspective, I still listen to them on many weeks. It's pretty somber over there for any kind of person trying to build a gaming PC or anything. It's just a terrible year for it. There's a lot of resentment. The prices are skyrocketing. And you don't know, will it crash? Will it come back? I don't know, Jim. Trying to predict that future is scary. I'm just so relieved that I kind of made the pitch to my wife about my computer's 10 years old. This thing can't run the latest version of Windows, which my work computer's way newer. Right. 10 years is a long run, hon. That was a good run. It's still running 24 hours a day for 10 years.
Yeah, that's great.
That was $2,800 well spent, but it's time. My God, if I didn't do that, literally double price, especially the 8 terabyte SSD as well in there. Yeah. I would have been doomed. So I don't know what to say. I don't have anything good to say. It's just a terrible time to try to buy that stuff right now. And I don't know how long this will go on either. I feel really bad if someone's trying to shop in a hurry or grow a small business.
Yeah, if you got to do it right now, it's just terrible.
Yeah.
It's just, it's unfortunate. But my son, Tim, my number four son, he's a VR guy. He spends a lot of time in VR. He does a lot of VR work. He's in a lot of groups doing VR. Of course, the CPU or the GPU is everything for him. He just spent a couple $1,000s on a 5090. You know, and he's like, Dad, I needed it. I'm like, couldn't you wait? And he's like, no, I needed it right now. I just had to do it. And so he pulled the trigger and paid current whatever prices for a 5090. Hard to find. He had to do it, jump through a bunch of hoops to even get the thing. And he's like, but that's what I do. I mean, I gotta have this for what I'm doing. So I feel bad for those folks that are doing that, that have to do that kind of stuff. For me, Paul, I'm kind of like, I built a machine a couple years ago, maybe 3 years ago now. It's a Ryzen 5. It's got 128 gig of RAM, which I'm really glad that I just jammed it full with as much RAM. All of a sudden, I'm like, I feel like a genius. I'm like, yeah. just use that thing as much as I can, right? I mean, this may be a situation where used hardware may be the way to go for a while, right? Just until we get through this piece. Do you see the bubble bursting, the AI bubble bursting on the backside, and there may be a moment where this stuff gets cheap again and maybe like ridiculously cheap? I don't know. Do you see anything like that happening?
The very smart people on PC Perspective feel that way strongly. For me, I don't know how it'll burst, but I do feel like I'm getting way more than my money's worth out of AI right now. I'll give you an example.
that's a great way of saying.
Correct. So my HVAC system, right? You're talking well over $10,000. Each heat pump alone is $5,000. There's two of them. Never mind the labor or the ductwork. Well, they never hooked up a wire so that the air conditioning would turn on in the winter for a few minutes. My wife's like, what the heck? You know, we mentioned this in the Matt Farrell video, but it's the defrost mode. They never hooked up a wire.
Yeah.
Well, you can't just hook it up. You have two 24-volt transformers fighting each other. I'm like, well, how do I do the relay? Well, I feed it to Claude here on its new Opus 4.6. It saved my bacon this winter. The model comes out in December, was it? I'm using the heck out of it, figuring out how do I wire this? What part do I buy at supplyhouse.com? Went and did it. fixed it. And it enabled me to be smarter than I am on this stuff. This is low voltage stuff. You're not going to hurt anybody, right? It's 24 volt, no big deal. But it was beyond me to figure out this wiring. If you know what Wago connectors are or just simple thermostat wire, this was a plan to go up and just execute on the plan and explain to me the logic of why, how it works. Another example is last winter, I'm up there and doing ductwork, shortening, optimizing. Looks like this, Paul's crappy handwork. I'm like, you know what? I don't feel like drawing that in the surface plot that I have behind me, because I'm still not great with the stylus on the surface. Let me just feed it to the AI and see what it comes up with. And, you know, in 30 seconds, it spits this out.
That's great.
And it's like, oh man. It's just these eye-opening moments where, and on and on. I have so many more stories.
Yeah.
And it's going to sound crazy, but this Ecobee thing, I guess we'll shoot. You know, so many topics we didn't cover. But
I know it's good. I'll have you back on in a couple months.
Oh, it's up to you. But the Ecobee thing, 6 Ecobee thermostats, each room, zone controller, zone damper. So we can have me with the door closed, have this room independently handled because there's more load and I got monitors around me like you, and it gets warmer if the door's closed. Getting that right, Jim. The Ecobees don't talk to each other, nor would Nest. And of course, Google and Nest, that's a whole other story. They're independent devices. Well, just sharing an air handler in the attic, they can't be independent. So Home Assistant, $120 Raspberry Pi, Home Assistant Green is what the smarts. And I'm programming the thing. It's like I'm doing the software that I wish Ecobee or someone else would do. But who's helping me? Claude, Opus 4.6 Extended, Save My Bacon. The previous models from last winter didn't cut it. Wow. I got to this winter, I'm like, oh, I think I can do this. I can handle the fresh air system, the humidifier, the dehumidifier. And I'm close. My wife and I had that conversation today when it hit 55 degrees humidity last night because it was pouring rain and the ERV was sucking in outside air to try to do CO2 mitigation, but it kept sucking in outside air, which is incredibly humid during a heavy downpour. And I had the dehumidifier, whatever. All these, I'm telling you, there's positive and negative, mixed feelings, burning a lot of electricity. There's no way they're going to keep it at $20 a month. And I exceeded that wildly. I actually went for $200 a month for 1 month and I'm going nuts. I have 18 different projects in Claude right now. All I just ping them, hit it, go back 5 minutes when it's figured something out, hit it with another thing, looking for so-and-so product, shopping for something, finding it on a bunch of sources where they'll ship quickly to my address in 2 days. Mm. Pretty good at that stuff too, and on and on.
Yeah.
So like you have mixed feelings, but I'll end with that. The impact is rampant.
It's a great way to say it. I love that you're like, you're the first person that I've talked to who says, you know, we always talk about kind of the oversell of it. We're all using it and most of us are using it for free or some form of free, or we're paying $20 and we're just pounding it.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm getting great value out of this for the price that I'm paying.
You'd be saying that on the air, right? Is there one?
No.
It's going to happen anyway.
No, right on. Right. And that's what they want. Right. I mean, listen, this isn't the first time we've done this. We've done a lot of things. You and I and all the folks in this community have done a lot of things where we've been early adopters. It's been freemium type stuff. We've come in and used all that's available and then they change it to a pay model or whatever. And then, or the bubble bursts and we were like, yeah, no, I'm not going to pay for that at this point or whatever. Right. From that standpoint, something changes. So no, I think that's a good, I hadn't thought of it from that perspective. I've been kind of thinking about like how many people are going to pay the $20 to make this thing worth it. I hadn't thought about all of us super users who are just, I mean, I got friends at work who are just crushing this thing, getting code out of it, you know, and I have access to ChatGPT now and Claude. We just opened up Claude at work and they're like, where I work, they're like, use it as much as you can. Like, you know, it's not, they're not saying hold back. They're like, oh, I don't know about this. They're like, everything you do should be thought through the process of AI. And so we're just, I mean, I hammer the thing. I have some processes where I need to, you know, I'm looking up our customers on LinkedIn because I want to connect to them. And I just drop, you know, 50 names and email addresses and say, find those people on LinkedIn. And it goes out, just starts just burning through, right? That kind of stuff.
Yep. Busy
it's
work.
Great.
Yeah. No, it feels good. I mean, it's the most exciting thing, Jim, in 30 years of compute stuff. Like some of these moments I have were just like, oh my gosh, I just got that done so quickly.
Yeah.
There's really nothing that big. Like the internet was big, getting it online in the mid 90s and seeing a T1 connection at work. And but this feels pretty big too. Times like you can feel it. Hey Jim, I had a thought. Yeah. You gave a good hint coming in for a landing. Got you. I'm looking at the clock. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I wrote down some things. I used AI to put it together. Because basically I had a bunch of little notes. So I'd listened to your podcast and caught up lately. And oh man, your topics. An ear-opening one, Jay Franzen music. Oh my God, Jim. Like I still hear your old theme song when you introduced me at the beginning.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's the wrong song. But that was amazing, right? Just eye-opening, like what is happening in Tennessee there in the music industry and what you guys pulled off. That was a really special episode there. You interviewing AI was pretty cool. Another one, some other topics here. Blue Yeti and logging, server monitoring. We kind of into that today. Soft start. These new inverter-based Bosch IDS heat pumps that I have, a lot of them are soft start. So the newer tech and heat pumps, they don't make your lights turn brown in your whole house when they turn on like the old air conditioners did, right?
Yeah.
So you don't need to buy a soft start anymore. That's something I was thinking of you. There's all these
That soft start, by the way, I just had our HVAC folks out. They called us. We were having some nice weather and they were like, hey, we'd love to come out and do your air conditioner service early. Is that okay? Again, they're friends, right? So they were like, hey, I'm like, yeah, come on out early. So the tech who came out said, hey, I saw you install the soft start. Nice job. It was like, I did not expect that from kind of the old school HVAC folks. I kind of expected like, you know, you just voided your warranty kind of thing, right? That's a brand new air conditioner that I put out there. Mm-hmm. And to get that seal of approval from my HVAC guys felt pretty good, right? To be like, and a soft start, you don't need to be on solar. You don't need to be, I mean, that is actually something that you could install that helps just kind of start your air conditioner a little bit easier than you, you know.
Yeah. And to test out my system, the first summer I had power walls, I charged both cars, turned on the oven, turned on the dryer, and abused that and turned on both heat pumps for AC. I kept up just fine. The soft start's key there, right? That probably could be a problem.
For sure.
All right. And then finishing the little rapid fire for topics here, there was self-driving cars. The one that struck me, Waymo, right? They're kicking butt. And it's women. Women traveling, whether it's business or it's a hit. They're getting in a car without another human involved, without relieving that anxiety, getting from point to point safely. I think that's been underplayed in like the press or whatever. That's a big deal.
For sure.
And then Waymo spreading to other cities and so forth. Yeah.
Will Tesla keep up? They just made that announcement.
So my car is a 2018, right? I didn't know, what the world would change into, but it does not have cameras that clean themselves like the new cyber cabs do. I saw that coming. One of my sons works in tech and on that stuff. We talked about this 7-8 years ago. How could this ever work in poor weather? Yeah. If the cameras can't get clean. Seeing this, it took this long, but man, it's getting pretty good for hardware 4 owners. Mine's hardware 3 and it's still pretty dang good around town and all. It's impressive, but yes, you still have to pay attention and so forth.
Yeah.
So mixed feelings there too, because there's a whole thing about that car was delivered without even cruise control. So basically I needed to buy self-driving. It's cruise control wasn't even adaptive. All it could do was go one speed. So they basically upsold you. But it also wasn't $8,000. It was much cheaper than two.
Right.
But 7 years later, am I supposed to feel bad about it?
Yeah.
Not really. But people that bought it just now, well, hardware 4 even, it's a whole nother mixed thing. So now they're doing a pretty sleazy way to do it. Waymo's a lot smarter.
Yeah.
The stuff that Tesla's doing is just PR stunts and stock pumping, which I never own stock in any of these companies.
Right.
All right. And then Slate could be interesting. PC.
I'm still thinking about Slate, Kevin Schooner.
I heard you mention that. Yep.
I'm thinking about Slate.
You've had a guest talking about EVs. So your topics, my point is, they're great. And then, of course, Christian, the stuff he talks about. Yeah. Just so much fun as I'm listening to stuff, working on stuff around the house or whatever, or mowing or snow blowing.
Yeah.
You just keep nailing it with the topics, the stuff.
Appreciate that. I love doing this. Like, I almost quit. In December, I was going to call it quits.
Mm.
I was like, we'll have Christian on and then I'll announce that I'm going to wrap this up. But I just love doing this so much. I love this conversation you and I that are having tonight.
No, thank you.
I don't want to quit. I don't want to quit. So I'm not going to. And Paul, let me ask you, I ask you the question about the, RAM prices, but you also mentioned just a little bit earlier, your site, tinkertry.com, right? You're the most thorough blogger, so to speak, right? You post, you do a post, you update the post, as you get more information, you put more information in there. Like, there's no better site that I've ever seen that gets the level of moderation in updates that you give. But you kind of said, I mean, are the days of blogging over? Like, you said, I don't have a podcast, I'm not doing YouTube. Like, how's the site doing? And like, is a traditional website over? Are those days over, do you think, from having that out there? I mean, are the heyday, are we out of the golden age?
Giving a short answer is tough, but I'm on AI. I'm searching something about smoke detectors, and I come across my own article. There's that moment, like, oh, there we go. I'm one of those people that actually looks for the source on Perplexity or whatever, clicks on it. Most people just look.
Right.
And it was a weird feeling. It's like, well, what's the point? I mean, I shared it with the world so that it helps other people. It's just more like a hobby. You're not going to make money in the ads to keep the lights on. So it's, I have to admit to my wife, it's a cost now per month to keep it going. I just landed my first advertiser in a long time, but I used to be at almost 2 million readers a year. You know, those days are long gone. For everybody I talk to, Matt Farrell, everybody, it's all algorithmic and it's moving more and more towards visual and shorts. Well, I'm the opposite. It's long form articles that very few people enjoy reading. They want the short version. Yeah. There's a few people though that do want the details, right?
Yeah.
They're my core niche. So I mixed feelings about it. I mean, it's like if AI can scour it and someone will actually find it, wouldn't find me otherwise, and they've helped brighten their day and make something a little easier, that's okay. And AI was trusting me. I have to be a decent source, I guess. So, but again, it reminds me of newspapers. Craigslist goes away. How does a newspaper stay in business? How do you have an impartial newspaper when all the oligarchs are buying them? It's bad. So for a little guy larger like me, I can see the writing's on the wall. How long do the bills get paid? It's at least 50 a month to just keep it running. And the code, I know you have Christian too. The code was another thing. So my son devised all this 14 years ago, graduating from high school. Well, now he's in his 30s, right? And like, how do I manage this code? Well, AI helped me there. I just revamped my website recently, sped it up, brought the cost down, CDN and all that. So, sorry, it's a long, convoluted answer, Jim. I say blogging, it's pretty much toast. And Twitter, really, 23,000 posts, I'm done with it. I left it 2 years ago. I'm mad about that too, but what are you going to do? You can't download it and you can't publish it.
Right.
So I've got Twitter download, everything I did there, but I can't just publish it and let people find it because that's a no-no. It's the same ugly feeling. Mm-hmm. I use the word encrapification, but look it up. So many companies, just VMware, I worked there.
Yeah.
Revered. Everyone loved it. Now reviled.
Yeah.
Sorry. I know that's maybe a little rough,
but
it's just squeezing shareholder value until the
things change
and get rid of the little guys. So
things change. Hey, listen, the same is true of long form podcast content like you and I are doing right now. Like this for a while, this was super popular. We're down to, I'm down to a few, in this case, a couple hundred, maybe 400 or 500, right? It's just a different day. It's a different day. And listen, the thought process I went through of stopping was like, does anybody really care? And then I was kind of like, yeah, I care. So I'm just going to keep doing it because I like doing it. And I like having these conversations. Listen, how often do we get to have these structured conversations around this kind of technology that makes a difference? We can ask each other questions. We get opinions. People can kind of listen, get great feedback from the listeners. It's not giant, but I didn't depend on the advertising. You may have depended a little bit more on the advertising.
Oh, I did. Yeah.
I didn't, I was like, I'm good. We're just doing this.
Yeah, I bought with my own money the things I review generally. There are very few owners,
No, needed. For sure.
So,
for sure. Yeah, no, for sure. So, well, tinkertry.com, just like it's spelled, T-I-N-K-E-R-T-R-Y.com, just like it's spelled, tinkertry.com. I'll have the link in the show notes. You should check that out. Maybe the best written tech blog I've ever seen, Paul. You're meticulous with it. You've done a great. I was always envious. I was like, man, I wish I could do the level of detail that Paul does, but I'm not built that way. And you are. So I'm glad that you did that.
I appreciate it, Jim. For me, the learning experience is partly by writing it down or typing, whatever. It helps me. So when I learn something deeply, it's just like a tool for me. Yeah. But the fun part too, the opportunities, two of my jobs and managers, it helped. right, my career. So you could call it a hobby, but it also changed my life for the better in many ways, like going to Vancouver for an electrification show where they had an electric seaplane there. And I got to speak with the engineer, a woman, who was just incredible. I recorded that video my first one in years, and it had 17,000 views in a week. I'm like, oh, that feels good. Yeah. A bunch of nerds who fly planes in the bush of Canada watching my video talking about, oh, that's cool, an electric seaplane. And hey, you did a decent job with the interview. I'm not an engineer, Jim. I'm just nerding out about the tech.
Well, you kind of are. Well, you kind of are.
Well, in Europe, an engineer is a certificate.
Yeah, so, for sure.
You know, yeah.
Sure.
So those are the fun moments where it's like you said, it's brightening people's day, having a little fun. It wasn't really
fun.
That video, by the way, made a couple $100. It helped the airfare.
Nice.
That whole trip, my own dime.
Yeah.
But that's the reality. So we're not boo-hoo us, though. We had like good stuff at our...
No, for sure. It'll come around. There'll be a different thing. It's okay. You know, the podcasting days are changing a little bit. It's okay. There'll be another thing that comes. They always does. We've seen this cycle before.
Well, let me close with that thought,
though. Yeah.
That Hotel Marcel, that passive hotel I told you in New Haven, Connecticut, basically a world showpiece of all electric hotel. Inductive cooking, no gas stoves. The cooks in the kitchen have to know how to cook with induction. All of it. Meeting Matt Farrell there to film one video with him where we got a tour of the place. In the lobby, there's like a film crew for local news. And you can imagine what I'm thinking. I have the stick-mounted 360 camera. I'm the cameraman for Matt.
Yeah.
His video gets seen by over 1 million humans on the planet. The local news with a crew of 5 people and a big camera, a few thousand, that's the world changing, right? So what an honor for Matt to have such a reach in people's respect that his word is good and it's awesome.
Yeah.
His word is everything, his reputation. And that's okay. I'm an honor to have even a slice of that or a moment of that to do something fun that makes people's day a little brighter.
Yeah.
And that's very different than what I'm used to, which is writing long articles with words, right? But a whole lot more people are going to see it. Okay, the world changes. You got to roll with it.
Yeah. Well, you made my day a little brighter when I was watching Matt Farrell and I saw Paul Brennan's face. I was like, this is awesome. And I know he's mentioned you before, so it's not the first time, the first time you were mentioned there, but to see you pop up on his video, and I really respect what he does. I love his... I love his approach to it, and I'm just a big fan of what Matt does. He's kind of grown into that space, and he's made some huge risks, building a new home and going 100%, trying to do net zero and all the work that he does. And
his whole livelihood is YouTube.
Yeah, he pulls no punches. Here, he says it exactly like the way it is. I think I get the feeling that is exactly like the way it is. And so thanks for partnering with them. I'll look forward to the future stuff that you get to do with them. Hopefully you'll show up, you continue to show up with him, but appreciate you being in the community. Listen, Paul, we've known each other for a long time and appreciate you saying yes when I asked you to come on. So thanks for joining me tonight.
Thank you, Jim. You brighten my day too. It's always fun to get up. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Can you hang tight for 1 second while I close this up? Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. A couple things. Reminder on the way out, the AverageGuy.tv platform, both web and media hosting, powered by Maple Grove Partners. Yeah, they're still doing that. And I think Christian's still selling plans for $10. Listen, I went to buy gas the other day. It's gotten a little expensive. So if you need hosting, check it out, maplegrovepartners.com. And and he's got a plan. Probably he can set something up for you, doing a bang up job there as well. If you want to join the Discord group, one of the things I've kind of quit posting, if you're listening to this, if you made it this far in the listening to it on the podcast, you're probably one of the 1% in most engaged listeners. So give yourself, give yourself some credit for doing that. Appreciate you listening this far, this late. But, when we think about the Discord group, I've moved a lot of our interaction into the Discord group. So if you want to join us there, theaverageguy.tv/Discord, private. I'm kind of keeping things. I'm not blasting stuff out on Twitter. I'm not blasting stuff out on LinkedIn, at least as far as this goes, for the most part. But we have a great group in Discord. So if you want to join the conversation, if you want a little more curated experience, join us in Discord, theaverageguy.tv/Discord. Just jump in. Just last week, a couple of you did, and I appreciate you guys joining that. And just a great place to have these conversations. and just kind of keep it among us. I don't know. The world got a little weird on me, Paul. And I was like, you know what? Let's just keep the conversations between us. And so you can join that Discord group and do it as well. We are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out here at theaverageguy.tv/live. And next week, Gavin Campbell is jumping in here. And so we'll get a chance to catch up with Gavin. And then Christian, 2 weeks later, they take a week off. I have a giant work week of podcasting. Paul, we have an event we're doing. We already have 5,000 people registered for this event, this virtual event. So I thought I'd take the week off. It's going to be a little bit crazy. I didn't have to, but I thought I'm doing 11 sessions over 4 days. I thought, you know, probably by Thursday night, I'm going to be a little tired of talking. So we're going to take the 26th off. And then Christian's joining me on the 2nd of April. And you want to join us too. And then you remember Dwayne Robinson? Do you remember that name? Do you know Dwayne from Microsoft? Is that name?
I remember him.
Remember Dwayne?
Yeah.
Dwayne's coming back on the 16th. And then Mark Robson.
He did all kinds of stuff in cars. Yeah, he's got stories.
Yeah, and now he's doing Copilot. So I'm super anxious to catch up with him. Like, hey, what's going on? He's been doing a lot of Copilot stuff. So that may be a good AI show. And then Mark Robson's coming back on the 23rd to talk about barbecue. Like, why would, right? That never gets old. And so come back and join us if you want to join us live on Thursday nights. We start at 8 p.m. Central. And if you join the Discord group, you get a notification from me that we're going live. Paul, thanks again for joining me. Always great to be with you. Hang on, hang tight for a second. We'll do a smidge in a post show. But that, we'll say goodbye to everybody.
Where the screens glow bright and the Wi-Fi peaks. If you're looking for the tech talk you can actually keep, then settle on in with Home Gadget Geeks.